The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Michael Tan, a co-chair of the Vancouver Chinatown Legacy Stewardship Group, sees how the community there has been facing unique barriers since the pandemic began. Chinatown's vacancy rates have skyrocketed by about 30%, extremely high in comparison to other parts of the city, and businesses there took a major hit when tourism stopped flowing with the border closure. The once bustling Chinatown Plaza is now over 60% vacant, with most of the ground floor up for lease. Less foot traffic means less money being spent at stores, and over the past year, places started shutting down. I'm Allie Laube, and there's so much more to this story. I talk to Tan this week for Co-op Radio about what Chinatown is doing now to come together in the face of adversity and how people there, especially seniors, can get some more support. Can you just tell me how you've seen the community change over the last 12 months in Chinatown where you work?
Chinatown is in a very precarious place right now. It was in a risky place probably 12 months ago, but the pandemic has made it worse. What I mean specifically about that is vacancy rates have increased in the neighborhood. Before the pandemic, I believe, the vacancy rates were about 13%. That was already greater than the citywide average of about 11. According to some early studies in the fall, that number had skyrocketed to 17-18%. So that's about a 25% increase on those vacancy rates. What that means is not just that there's less space activation, but what has caused that is this decrease in foot traffic and the follow-on effects from that because of the pandemic. With the less foot traffic in the area, there's been an increase in crime in the neighborhood or perceptions around safety. Definitely see more, incidents in the neighborhood, some that have become physical, unfortunately. And, that's a direct result of the pandemic.
Why do you think it is that those vacancy rates have skyrocketed so much over the last 12 months?
Over the summer, there was no tourism traffic. Chinatown is one of those interesting places that, like many small businesses, they rely not just on local residents, but the inflows of, people visiting, right, from other neighborhoods. That's one thing, but also Chinatown specifically relying on traffic from, people visiting Vancouver overall. Chinatown is, still one of the, great tour destinations to go check out. Many destinations like the Chinese Garden, a lot of the shops and restaurants to go check out. So when we closed the borders, the cruise ship traffic as well, it really took a toll on the neighborhood. That's probably one of the impacts. The other impact is why Chinatown specifically, some of the businesses fared worse than other neighborhoods was that with the Canadian government, what they did was these commercial rent subsidies, which were available pretty much Canada-wide. But what had happened in this neighborhood is, number one, many of the small business owners were not able to access the program. Initially, that program had to be administered and applied for by the landlord, and many of the landlords actually did not end up applying on behalf of the businesses. And what happened is that there were actually a significant number of shops that closed up because of that. Again, because their landlord would not apply, even though the business themselves was fully eligible for the subsidy. What we also saw is in Chinatown Plaza, so this is a fairly large indoor mall, a mini mall. And, because it was actually owned by the city of Vancouver, the municipal government, they actually were not eligible for that same program at all. Now in that Chinatown Plaza, you're seeing a vacancy rate of probably upwards of 60 to 70%. You walk in there and, every shop on the ground floor is pretty much for lease.
Yeah, 60 to 70% in Chinatown Plaza. Wow, that's a sweep. And that must have had a huge impact on the broader community. How did you see that impact the other folks who usually would be able to access those services and visit those shops?
Yeah, it is those follow-on effects. Once you close certain shops and, and they're gone, that decreases the incentive for people to, travel to the neighborhood. There are benefits to having just more shops in general, just being concentrated. One of the more visible businesses that closed was Goldstone Bakery. And, that, considered an institution in the neighborhood, being both an affordable eatery. It was a place for, you know, multiple generations of people to hang out, right? You'd go there to, you know, have lunch or tea with grandparents or whatever prior to the pandemic, but COVID definitely played a role in them shuttering. And it was a bit heartbreaking for the community. What I missed mentioning was also that there's another program available for these small business owners, actually a wage subsidy program. You know, essentially, the government would cover a portion of workers' wages that you were paying for your staff. The unfortunate problem in Chinatown is that because a significant number of these businesses, because they're mom and pop, they actually did not employ staff, and they actually would not pay wages to themselves. They would just take, you know, cash flows from the business overall. There's another program that these business owners were not able to take advantage of. I should also add that, you know, there is a bit of a racialized component, I mean, a bit of a systemic issue in Chinatown. What we saw was that the federal government provided a $17 million emergency bail program for Granville Island. For your listeners that are not familiar with the area, Granville Island is a community, I would say, is predominantly white, pretty much a bit higher income, but because they were essentially created, you know, as a neighborhood in the 70s, versus in the 70s, Chinatown was kind of actively being torn down by the government. They were able to essentially lobby early for federal funding bail to, you know, essentially allow them 1 year of free rent, you know, across the board, across the neighborhood for 1 year scot-free. Compare that directly with Chinatown and not having a single cent. And that $17 million was entirely separate from any other emergency funding. So they were essentially singled out as a neighborhood that was to be bailed out versus Chinatown, you know, not receiving a dime.
These are some of the issues, some of the struggles that we've been seeing, but how have you seen people in, you know, this geographic hub that is Chinatown able to come together and support each other to survive these things over the last 12 months?
My favorite thing about Chinatown is, you know, with it being such a tight-knit community that, you know, people rise to the challenge. And all the stuff that was happening before the pandemic, in terms of gentrification, displacement, the loss of character for the neighborhood, and the pandemic really exacerbating, you know, these issues. But what we've seen is the community coming together even more so, right? There have, you know, been more online events. There's programs to, you know, promote takeout and delivery for people to visit the restaurants in the area and the small businesses. You know, we're really proud to get the city to move forward with funding to support these small businesses from a special programs point of view. So essentially, like, helping them, you know, get aligned, helping them, you know, become more digital businesses. That's a pilot program that's underway right now called the Special Enterprise Program. What we'd also seen is a lot more of these grassroots programs that I've mentioned. For example, there's the Chinatown Grocery Cares Project. So that was a collaboration between the Hua Foundation, Ural Intergenerational Group. And essentially, they're delivering culturally appropriate grocery boxes to seniors in the neighborhood to help them not have to go out to the grocery store and increase their risk of exposure to COVID during the last year. And they had fundraised online entirely through fundraiser. They have some support through, I believe, also VanCity. And they've been, you know, delivering those every week. One of the other societies that I work with, the Challenge Society, I'm the director there, you know, during the pandemic, you know, in partnership with one of our funding sponsors, BC Housing, we've delivered over 25,000 hot, culturally appropriate meals to our seniors residents. But there's a lot of programs like that. Culturally, I would say, even during Lunar New Year, myself, I'm representing the Chaolin Athletic Club, so we're a lion dance and kung fu school that educates youth in the community. And, you know, we collaborated with Hua Foundation and Chinatown Today. You know, when we saw that there wasn't going to be a Lunar New Year celebration this year, it was 9 days out, and we decided, you know what, if no one's going to do it, we need to do something. And we actually put on what was called the Auspicious Lunar New Year celebration. It was an online event. You know, we drew upwards of 500 families from not just, you know, in Vancouver, Lower Mainland, with people, you know, coming online from Glendon, France, Germany, watching this event to celebrate the Year of the Ox, but called the Auspicious event. It was an hour of programming content. Like, we did a lion dance celebration, there's kung fu demonstrations, singing, songs, Cantonese lessons. To us, it was just a showcase of, you know, this community coming together in a very short amount of time, right, to put something on to help celebrate Chinatown.
with all of these different things that have happened, there's been a lot of focus on seniors, it seems. Can you explain that for people who aren't familiar with some of the barriers that seniors in Chinatown might have to getting themselves support?
There are so many seniors in Chinatown. So, I mean, we're such a fairly small neighborhood geographically. In Chinatown and downtown East Side, there's probably about 2,000 units of low-income housing that's specifically for seniors in the neighborhood. That's split between SROs, that's single-room occupancy units, and other independent living. Some of the barriers they face is, number one, language. Many of these seniors don't speak any English. They're immigrants and never learned the language. And number two, technology barriers. So when I'm talking about a lot of these online events and even takeout and delivery, it's difficult for them to access these programs because of those two, really, language and technology. The last one that's a big bit of barrier for these folks as well is mobility. And all three come into play when we're talking about things like the vaccination process. As well, that it's been quite a challenge to get these folks registered and vaccinated.
And you've been doing some work with that, right? Can you just briefly tell me about the work that you do with seniors in Chinatown?
Yeah, so right now the urgent work that's going on is getting these seniors vaccinated. The eligible group right now are any seniors 80 years and older. But again, for those same rationale, the language barriers being monolingual, only speaking one language, technology barriers not being able to, go on the internet and, go online. And number three, kind of mobility to actually even get into different neighborhoods. Those are the three, kind of, it's just creating this perfect storm of denying these seniors, what is the safety of being vaccinated against the coronavirus. The registration process that Vancouver Coastal Health, who is responsible for administering the vaccination, right now what they've done is in order to access the vaccine, someone needs to phone in to register. What they said is that there is translation available, but in practice what's happening is when you phone in, you're actually greeted with a 3-minute English-only recording laying out who's eligible. And, at the end of 3 minutes, again, only in English, there's a, you have to press 1 to confirm you're eligible, again, only in English. Only after that, are you connected to a live agent, again, who only speaks English. And at that time, you're able to ask them for translation. But again, you have to request that in English, and then they would patch. They would patch in someone that speaks your language, right? If you can communicate or convey to them, what language you need. The idea really early on was like, well, why don't you just gate that system immediately by language? You could have the recording language appropriate right up front. I mean, save a lot of these seniors a lot of time and headache. And then it's not just, the Chinese seniors. It's all racialized communities, right? Like, so when we're talking about, we're advocating on behalf of the Chinatown and Chinese seniors, we include all the other racialized communities that are facing these same barriers. So that was just a registration process. Even once they started announcing where these clinics are set up, with downtown Eastside and Chinatown, again, such a heavy concentration of vulnerable populations and at a higher risk of COVID exposure and mortality rates, when they, again, announced where the closest clinic was, it's at Athletes Village, which is about, geographically, line of sight is not that far. It's probably about within 5 kilometers. So that's about 2 bus rides. But the thing is, when you're talking about, again, these seniors that, have difficulty navigating the bus system, it's not a direct bus ride. It's not, once you're there, you're in an entirely new neighborhood that you have no idea where you're going. It might as well be on the moon, when you're talking about 5 kilometers,
yeah.
Right? So what we've been trying to get Vancouver Coastal Health to do is set up in the neighborhood, right? Or, even better, it's going building to building. We have heard, we've seen that they are going to specific individuals performing vaccinations, many of which are, men that are under social workers and require more urgent care, but they're able to do that on a mobile basis. We do believe that it is feasible for them to go to these buildings directly and do mass vaccinations.
When did you start making that call from BCH?
About 3 weeks ago, it's kind of funny because for the last few months, leading up to vaccination, because of my work, we work very closely with the city and city staff, you'd think that they would be the ones that are, that Vancouver Coastal Health would be reaching out to coordinate on the ground efforts in the extend out east side and Chinatown, just because, you know, there is a higher vulnerable population. But they had not been hearing anything. So about 3 weeks ago, as it was getting closer to the vaccination rollout was going to occur, you know, we started doing work to reach out to Vancouver Coastal Health. It's like, yeah, okay, we've got, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, these 2,000 seniors in this neighborhood that are vulnerable are going to be taken care of. And when we started writing the letters and, you know, doing the outreach, you know, I remember getting an email from city staff that, oh, they'd finally been contacted by the Vancouver Coastal Health. I'm like, oh, great. I don't have to do any work anymore. And then they turned around and said, no, you actually still need to reach out to Vancouver Coastal Health because we haven't heard anything other than this initial contact. So I'm like, oh, okay. We appreciate how difficult this challenge of, you know, providing vaccinations on a massive scale is. I really do. But, you know, we still have a responsibility to raise these hurdles that these vulnerable populations are being overlooked. That's just the short and long of it. They're being missed entirely. And it's utterly heartbreaking when I'm down in the neighborhood. You know, I was just parking my car visiting the other day, and, you know, a senior at the Challenge Tower that I volunteer at, you know, she saw me and I said hi, and she's like, oh, what's going on with the vaccinations? And I'm like, well, you know, I knew she had her family here, so I knew she had grandchildren that could help her get vaccinated. And, you know, but she looked at me in the eyes like, no, we're relying on you to bring them here to get us vaccinated. And it's just so frustrating to see that Vancouver Coastal Health is unable to do that.
And that's a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, we're all in this together. A lot of us are working very diligently. You know, I'm not the only one pushing on this. You know, full credit to the Yarrow Intergenerational and SRO collaborative groups as well, and of course the city staff that were pushing Vancouver Coastal Health, you know, to make sure that these seniors are taken care of and not overlooked.
Those were all the questions that I had to ask you. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up that we didn't get to go over?
There's always a lot happening in Chinatown. I'm always, Ellie, I gotta say, I'm always, you know, although there is a lot of work, my heart is uplifted when, you know, there is just so many people that care so deeply about the neighborhood, its residents, its business, and just the fabric that is that neighborhood and everything about it. So, you know, the work continues, and we're all pushing hard.
I'm Ali Laube, and you just heard my conversation with Michael Tan, a co-chair of the Vancouver Chinatown Legacy Stewardship Group. There really is so much more going on in Chinatown. If you have any time at all to do some research into some of the groups that were name-dropped in that interview, there's a lot of opportunity to learn more about things like the grocery program, which gets groceries to people who need them, or the meal delivery programs. And there's a bunch of different ways for people to connect culturally as well. So look up organizations like the Hua Foundation and Yarrow, that's Yarrownhua, to learn more about the work that they do. You can also check out the organization that Tan is involved with if you're interested in learning more about their work. That was the Vancouver Chinatown Legacy Stewardship Group. This is Ali Laube for Co-op Radio, The Pulse.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.